You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Taking up the story from the knowledge that we seek,
broadening horizons into ear. Hello and welcome to episode number 26 of the Modern Myth Podcast. My name is Tristan, aka the Anarchaeologist, and today I have very special guests with me. Now, you might have seen, if you're into video games, the game Relooted. It's a side-scrolling action puzzle game made by the creative team over at Niamakop. Oh, I keep pronouncing that incorrectly, but I'll get it in the end. And it's about taking African items back from Western museums, or that's how it's been talked about in the news media. So what we're going to do is we're going to dive into all the different pieces that went together into building this game and its narrative. And we'll also take a look from a kind of archaeology and museum standpoint again. Today, I am joined by Ben Myers and Mohale Mashigo, who are the creative director and narrative director of Relooted. Thank you very much for coming to do this today with me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so excited. Thank you for having us.
So I want to start off with kind of, if you could describe Relooted as a finalized game to somebody, what's the main thing that you want to convey in what kind of game this is? Why don't you start, Ben?
Oh my God. The pitch we've always used for a very long time is an African futurist heist game about reclaiming real looted African artifacts from Western museums. Mm-hmm. Which kind of sums it up, but it's dense and there's a lot to unpack there, I guess. But that's the summary.
That's what we've got in the next little bit of time for as well. So, Mohale, is there a reason why we've made the Relooted is Afrofuturist? Is there kind of a reason that was kind of taken as the kind of narrative area space for that to kind of be made in?
I think it was important to make it African futurist because we also had an opportunity to say, what does the continent look like in the future? And also to be able to step away from now and say, this is what we'd like to see happen in the future. And I'm also interested in African futurism because I think a lot of the time we are overwhelmed with Afrofuturism. And so it's a fun opportunity to do something that's African futurist.
And what are the hallmarks of what makes something African, Afrofuturist, African futurist? How do I know that this is African futurist? What do I see? What's different?
I would say maybe possibly because of who's making it, because I wrote this whole long essay about how Afrofuturism is not for Africans living in Africa. We have a very different point of view. I think point of view is very important, but also it's never really a power fantasy, right? Because a lot of Afrofuturism tends to be power fantasies, whereas I think African futurism has elements of trying to solve problems and reimagine how the continent is or how it can be.
And it's also, I think, the delineation there between African futurism and Afrofuturism is about often like real places as well. I think it makes a big difference. Like Afrofuturism is often imagined places or like collages of different places, while African futurism tries to set it in the actual future of real places, real people, real cultures on the continent, which I think makes somewhat of a difference, especially if you're making stuff on the continent.
So in that kind of similar vein, so Relooted would be an African futurist kind of game where like, so what real things or real places could we see in Relooted, or like what real places inspired pieces in Relooted then?
Relooted is actually the team's base of operations is in Johannesburg, and their hideout is an actual place that exists in Joburg. But also we've got portions of the game that happen outside of Western places, and you'll be able to see the Nelson Mandela Bridge. They're just little places that if you're from Johannesburg or if you've been to Johannesburg, you'll be able to recognize.
How did this kind of start as an idea? I know there's always been a kind of a joke about the reverse Indiana Jones going in and looting the Western museums and giving stuff back. But how did this kind of start from a perspective of like development? What was the idea?
So So I was actually on a trip with my parents to London, and I went off to some like game developer event.
As I do.
Yeah. And my parents went off to the British Museum, and then we met up in the evening, and my mother was filled with rage because she had just seen, I think it's pronounced a NIRAD monument, which is, you know, essentially the entire front of a building or like the front of a temple, which was moved from the south of Turkey into the British Museum. And she was sort of like shocked at the scale of that sort of, you know, looting. And she just said to me flippantly, you should make this into a game. I wasn't really sure how to make moving a building out of another building an interesting and fun thing to do. Mm. So very quickly I was like, oh, what about, you know, African artifacts, because, you know, repatriating African artifacts has been a topic on the continent for a very long time. So it very quickly turned into that. And since then, it obviously working with the team, it's changed a lot over time. It did actually technically start as an Afrofuturist game until Mahale joined. And there's a lot of stuff that sort of changed over time. But that was the initial point or of that idea coming to life, was, as all things do, a visit to the British Museum, I guess.
I was what you were going to say, as all things do, a conversation with your mom.
Oh, yeah.
That too. an inspiration, yeah. Of course. It's interesting, obviously, that going to the British Museum, so I grew up in Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland has its own relationship with Britain or England. I have been to the British Museum before, and I don't necessarily share the same kind of admiration for what Western museums have done. And I am a keen advocate of repatriation. But it's interesting, when you were then researching different artifacts to represent in the game, what did you come across with regards to your understanding of what repatriation is currently happening?
That's an easy one. Go ahead.
So I think one is aware of there being African artifacts, you know, in Western museums. And I think at the time, now I'm going to forget his name, and I remembered it just the other day. Emery Mwazulu, he's an activist from DRC, and he was sort of going into museums and really picking things up and walking out, you know. He was not deterred by, you know, getting arrested a few times. And we started thinking about this conversation of repatriation and this kind of paternalistic, yes, we have these things, but we'll loan them to you. It's, you don't loan people their things that you took from its context, you know?
I think it was also like, almost the difficulty was not like finding artifacts that had been taken, but more
which ones.
Yeah. Like, I think when that French government report came out, which it said like 90% of sub-Saharan African cultural heritage is kept outside the continent in museums and private collections, you sort of realize the scale of what you're talking about. It's like millions and millions of items. So honestly, the difficulty was more like which artifacts to include rather than could we find any? Mm-hmm. So the research was, you know, I think tricky in some ways to find which ones we wanted to include, which had the best stories, most interesting stories. And I don't know about you, Mahale, but I think what was amazing for me is learning about these artifacts not being on the continent. I had no idea about so many of these, and also the cultures and histories and civilizations they were a part of, because, well, they're not here either.
And taken out of their context.
Yeah.
And also robbed people from those countries of having access to that and having a sense of identity. Oh, this used to be, you know, whatever. There were these ancient kingdoms. And also, how many people can afford to just leave the continent and go see their heritage in Europe?
Yeah, some of those museums are free to entry, but the visa and the flight is pretty expensive.
That's true. Yeah.
I've been lucky enough on this podcast to have spoken to archaeologists who work in Africa, who are African. And I was speaking to a Nigerian archaeologist, and he was telling me that, like, a lot of the time people don't really know about their own history, that the kind of stories, that basically colonial kind of histories that overwrote what was happened before, are believed by many people. You know, the idea that, like, Africa was this kind of very primitive backwater that didn't have any sort of development or real big culture. It's something, unfortunately, this archaeologist in Nigeria is saying, a lot of Nigerians believe, you know, and the fact that what he does with community digs is kind of shows how much technology, how much development, how much culture there was prior to any kind of European colonization. And it kind of links people to their past in a really direct way. And was there ever anything specifically to, since you're all based in Johannesburg, is there anything connected to South Africa that came up as an item to kind of be repatriated?
I don't think we actually have any South Africa. Oh, we've got like the engraved horn, I think.
Engraved horn, maybe, yeah. I don't think there are a lot. I think South Africa itself was a colonial power in Southern Africa too. So we actually have a few artifacts that also need to be repatriated.
One of the great Zimbabwe birds.
Yeah, the British Museum had one of the great Zimbabwe birds, and they've actually returned it back to Zimbabwe. But South Africa still has a great Zimbabwe bird that it hasn't returned. That's one of the few ones that I know of. And there's a lot of sort of like internal looting, I guess you could say. Which was the precursor to Great Zimbabwe. A lot of these very beautiful little golden animals that we only have the golden rhinoceros, but apparently there's way more than that. But because of the way the site was excavated, quote unquote, we have no idea where they are. So we didn't find a lot in South Africa particularly, but that's possibly related to
our history.
Exactly.
And obviously when you were making these decisions about which items kind of represent in the game, was there any kind of thought given to making sure that you kind of represented as many different cultures as possible? Or, you know, what was the thinking behind being sure there was kind of like it represented Africa as a continent? Or was it more about just about the stories? Was there any kind of consideration of making sure it was kind of spread out? Or
we definitely did our best to make sure that it's artifacts from all over, but it's a huge continent. And I think we only ended up with 70 artifacts. And so the story was important, but also we tried to have as many countries as possible represented.
And that's just sub-Saharan Africa as well. Particularly we focus on that. That's just so much. It's very difficult to get the spread. I don't even know how many countries we have necessarily.
Do you want me to check?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but that's quite a good bunch.
No, it is. Yeah, no, definitely. What does, in terms of looking at kind of the narrative specifically as a kind of pitched as a kind of heist game, what was the thinking behind? Is it just that like heists, everybody understands what a heist is, everybody understands the stakes, the risks, and the kind of careful planning out? What kind of inspired the heist nature of Relooted?
God, I don't even.
Yeah,
I think that was always just kind of there.
Yeah, it was. It was always there, and I had a great opportunity to just, because I said to Ben, I need to do research, and all of my research is going to be watching heist movies, and so I just wanted to make sure that we captured that the essence of a heist team, and I think it was always going to be a heist game.
Yeah, it was always kind of there, to be honest, from the get go. I guess it's my mom's fault. That's it. That's the real answer. I think the complexities of making this specific story work as a heist was complicated, and Mahala can talk about that if she so wishes. But even gameplay-wise, it was really tricky. But it was always there. Now I'm thinking we could have had a much easier time. Like, we could have just been like debating to get the artifacts back or something. No one's ever asked that, actually.
Okay, I'll make it really simple. What's your favorite heist movie?
Oh, there we go.
It's considered one of the first heist films. It's Rififi. It's a French film. Mm-hmm. I know that makes me sound like such a pretentious person.
Oh, that French cinema, you've not seen it, darling. You've not seen it. I know you haven't.
That and the Oceans films, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Oceans films. I don't know what it's called, but there's a movie, I think, with Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman, I think, and they work as security guards at an art museum, and there's one beautiful painting that they're obsessed with, and they have a heist to steal it. These three older gentlemen.
I need to get that on my list. I thought I'd watched most of these heist movies.
There's so many. Oh my God.
What did make it difficult to put a heist kind of premise into gameplay specifically? I was going to ask, why are we going side-scrolling? What was the decision there?
So the sort of horribly ironic thing about games is that violence is very easy to game design. It's just very like by default, just like you do something and then there's a response. Like violence just fundamentally in video games is very easy to design. As soon as you try and do anything non-violent, it becomes a lot trickier and you need to be a lot more elegant to make it engaging. So a lot of the heist games that exist have some form of violence. And so the end result is something that feels more like a shooter than like an Ocean's 11 adaption.
Yeah.
So it took us quite a long time to figure out how to really adapt at least part of the filmic heist narrative structure into games. And our focus is always like, how do we make you feel like you have, you're in a heist montage for a movie of your own making? But that's very difficult because when you watch a heist film, you as the viewer don't actually ever understand the plan most of the time. And it's only revealed to you in the montage of doing the heist.
Which is one of those satisfying moments, right?
But in games, the player has to understand the pieces in order to play the game. So it took us quite a while to figure out how to combine those two things. And there was a game that came out called Teardown, which no one ever spots as a reference. But we essentially borrowed... /stole/looted, I guess. The gameplay loop. Yeah, the gameplay loop from there. I've just been telling everyone. It's not a very great secret, actually.
Wait, what's something? Great artists?
I think something.
Yeah.
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
That's the one.
Very good. What we'll do is we'll kind of talk a little bit more about how this all relates to archaeology and museums in our next segment. So stay tuned for that. And welcome back to the next segment of this conversation. It's Modern Myth episode 26, and we're talking about the game Looted with our two game developers, Mohali and Ben, narrative director and creative director. There we go. I've even assigned it the right way as well. I'm bossing this. This is great. We kind of talked a little bit about the kind of the inspiration and the kind of a little bit of the development of Relooted as a game and what kind of choices that went into it. Now, from an archaeology perspective, I can understand why you've come to this kind of conclusion and where this game is kind of placed, because I think it is really important that we have actual proper conversations about repatriation and other things. I don't know if you guys are aware that one of the reasons the British Museum doesn't repatriate stuff is technically by a 1963 law, it's not allowed to.
Mm.
And one of the ways to get around that is permanent loans. But again, it's kind of like the main problem with repatriation is that for a lot of the times that people talk about repatriation, they think very much about the physical objects as being this primary vector of repatriation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we miss out on the idea that for some things, repatriation is actually about who's pulling the strings, who's in charge. So yeah, you can imagine like a community who are told, we're going to repatriate you these items back to you. And the community says, we don't actually right now have the space to take care of these things. Can you hold on to them until we're ready? So the items aren't given back, but the community themselves have made the decision of what's happening to the items. That, to me, is the necessary level of repatriation that we need to have. It's to say that the people making the decisions are the ones doing that. That is the real repatriation, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys kind of feel that, like, what is the question that you are asking people when they play this game? You know, what is the final question of this art? Is it that we should do some repatriation? We should do all repatriation? Or what are you hoping people come away asking themselves?
I don't know about come away asking themselves, but I think I would like people to actually look at these artifacts, and we just have 70 right in the game, mm-hmm. and then think about how they were taken out of where they're supposed to be and how they're being handled, right? Because some museums have got so much stuff that it's never all going to be on display. And it's about how an identity of a people is just being used in this way. So I think I just want people to start thinking about that stuff, because I think as soon as people hear, oh, looted things, repatriation, they get their backs up. And I'm just like, think about it. Just think about it through these very interesting artifacts that are in the game.
I think, yeah, for me, the question really is, we're not really trying to convince anyone of repatriation in the game, at least. Like, we don't hit people over the head with it, but I think we present people the information of like how important these items are to the people they're from. And we sort of want to stir in the player's mind, should these things be where they are instead of back home in Africa? And then, you know, I guess the question also that sort of comes out of that is, oh, I didn't realize Africa had this rich cultural history and civilization, both as Africans or like people around the world. And that's also an invitation to learn about Africa. But the sticking point as well is then, oh, why didn't I know this? And that's like a rabbit hole that you go down. I think final note on this as well is, I think the artifacts we have in the game, there's almost like a delineation we need to have in terms of when we talk about repatriation. You know, like some of the artifacts in the game are actually human remains as well. You know, like Prince Salomeo from Ethiopia. That seems like a more straightforward conversation. Should the bodies of Africans not be returned to Africa, especially if they've been requested to be? You know, this is obviously an archaeology podcast. Like, when something is, you know, then found, you know, that's a more difficult conversation about repatriation, possibly. Cobwe skull is surrounded in the Natural History Museum in London by all these replicas, you know, but that's one of the only original ones. And most of the originals are stored in museums throughout Africa, but that one hasn't been returned. But then you also have items, at least in our game, which were not discovered. They were literally physically looted, like from that population that like was in existence. Exactly. So there's almost different conversations you need to have depending on what the item is and how it was taken. Because I think I want to, this is something we've seen assumed about the game, is that everything was, I don't know what the verb for archaeology is. Archaeologized? I don't
know. It was archaeology.
I should have looked that up before coming on this podcast. But it's like this assumption that it was just unused, found in the dirt somewhere in Africa and taken off to a Western museum, which often really wasn't the case. So it's difficult to almost have a broad sweeping discussion of it. But I very much agree with what you're saying in terms of there needs to be some sort of minimum effort to repatriation. There are definitely museums in Africa where stuff can be hosted, but in certain places they might not be. But there needs to be a good faith conversation about this stuff.
And we're not against cultural exchange. I think people are like, then what's going to be left in the museums? We're like, I don't know. You can definitely have some items, but they need to be given. You can't just be like, we're going to keep these ones.
I think this is, it's interesting you're picking up on the same problems that like archaeology and museum public kind of like interface, really, like trying to interface the public on these issues is just, it's the same issues that you've just said, is that number one, museums, especially in the UK, are really full up. When I was speaking to Professor Dan Hicks on one of the recent episodes, you know, we were talking about the amount of objects on display is probably in the region of 0.001% of the total overall collection.
It's just hoarding at this point.
And the amount of things that are in storerooms that will never go on display, that could be repatriated, it's a lot of things. You know, I think what people might kind of have a default view on is that museums operate in a certain way. That's how it's always operated. That's how it should operate. And I think it's good to have pieces of art that ask people questions to kind of disrupt that kind of way. Just because it is a certain way doesn't mean it has to be that way. You know what I mean?
If I can jump in to add on to that, one of the artifacts, one of my favorite artifacts in the game is called the Ngadji drum.
For
the Pacoma people.
It
was like their most important spiritual item where they believed all their power came from. And they thought it had basically been destroyed, I think, in 1910. But it just turned out it had been in storage in the British Museum for 100 years. And the first Kenyan person to see it in over 100 years was in like 2016. Mm-hmm. So that's a very visceral example of exactly what you're talking about. Like, this is not like a trinket. This is...
Yeah.
It means something to the Pokemon people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that you know, it's not as if the UK in particular, I can speak to that because I'm a British citizen on paper. There are aspects of history that we're steeped in, you know, like people understand, people, I think for some, and some parts are too steeped in certain parts of history and ignoring other parts of history. But like the idea that objects and history have some sort of symbolic permanence is very, it's very clear in our own culture over in the West, that is what happens. And to then deny that artifacts or symbols of history have no impact elsewhere is, I think, a bit myopic. And it is a bit of a denial. You know, talking about recreating these items in game, obviously the game has a certain visual style, right? How important was it to balance what these items actually look like with incorporating a visual style? And then if you're saying about having Humor Remains in the game, what's it like to have a kind of a digital copy of Human Remains? What was the kind of ethical thinking about that?
Mahalo.
Oh yeah, thanks. So to be honest with you, it was very important for the artifacts to look the way they do because we wanted to make sure that players could actually see what the actual thing looks like. Mm-hmm. With the remains, that was a tough one because we were like, do we want bones? Do we want it to be like wrapped in something? But I think it was very important to go this, like they have people's bones. They've got like skulls. So it was important to show it in a way that it's not just, you know, little trinkets or, you know, big culturally important things. They also have people's remains.
Yeah. I think in terms of the accuracy and the visual style, we've had some very funny fights with our artists about this. Like they were scaling up artifacts so you could see the mid-levels and we're like, guys, it's not that big. So we've kind of had to compromise a little bit. But I think the general sense or vibe of the thing is more important because at the end of the day, it is a video game. And the point is we want you to see that thing in a real museum, ideally in Africa. But
were, you know, any of the museums that your character goes and re-loots, what was the, is there a kind of, are they based on actual museums or is it just the, this futuristic, this museum in the future stand-in? Or is it actually based on anything? Work with the gameplay kind of loop and mechanics.
We actually made the decision very early on to not have real museums at all. And that was useful for a variety of reasons. For gameplay reasons, it makes it much easier to design levels when you don't have to stick as authentically to a real space. I think also, you know, not to be dismissive, but the artifacts are the point, not the museums in some ways, which is also like a maybe a pithy thing to do. But it's this, everyone talks about the British Museum, but there are African artifacts all throughout Europe and the US. It's unfair or inaccurate to target one or a collection of museums when it is sort of a systemic issue across all museums. And also, to be honest, we also want to parody the way the West often represents Africa as homogenous by doing the same thing back to Europe and the US by just sort of having generically European places you visit and generically American places you visit. So it's kind of all
the old world and the States is the shiny.
We made the decision early on to not actually have real museums for a variety of reasons. And we're kind of happy with that.
Do you ever have a level where you have to exit through the gift shop?
Oh my God, why did we do that?
Why did we not think of that?
Oh my God.
Okay, new level. Loading.
I did see someone post Ben Stiller, the Knight of the Museum, as the last great hope against this. I want a statue of him now.
It's, you know, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but the response, it seems, to even just the trailer for your game has been a bit weird online. And obviously that's kind of will affect, you know, who you're, like your whole team and how people see it. Like, how do you, I personally feel like there's a kind of, it's online culture war kind of very American-centric views of what racism is that are contributed to this like weird narrative about the game. How have you felt hearing all those weird kind of takes on it?
Yeah, it's complicated, right? I think what's been interesting about the announcing of the game is folks like yourself and other sort of like museum workers and museums have actually reached out to us to talk and have conversations, which is almost more thrilling and interesting than any sort of like popular response. It's like the people we're targeting, quote unquote, to this game are like, oh, they get it, you know? Mm. And then I think generally the response, obviously from the continent, as well as the larger African diaspora, has generally been very positive when you look in like very specific communities.
Yeah.
I think your analysis about the broader sort of culture war thing is probably accurate. There's a lot of sort of similar games in the past few years which have gone through that. I think what is different about our game is the team that makes it is obviously based in Africa. We've had people from 12 different African countries working on the game. So to have that sort of cultural discussion and sort of ideologies about race and those discussions projected onto an African team is rather strange. And, you know, we're just moving forward trying to find the pockets of people that are interested. Because at the end of the day, if there's a huge response from people who aren't interested in playing the game, you know, they don't have to play the game. We're interested in finding the people that want to play the game. So it's definitely been strange, but there's been a lot of great pockets of interest from people, and we're just trying to focus on that as much as possible.
What's it like for the, what is the video game industry like in for example, South Africa, because obviously that's where you guys are based. What do you see the kind of, because obviously a lot of industry is kind of, you know, Western focused, Europe, America, those kind of places. What's the change and the shift that's kind of like in African gaming that's kind of making it up and coming?
So I think the consumer market in Africa is possibly one of the last great, I don't know, markets that can be tapped into for games. It is extremely mobile heavy currently and very fragmented because every country has different payment systems, currencies, regulations, and so forth. So it's very complicated. And you have a lot of game makers across the continent, you know, from Maleo Games in Nigeria to Kiru Games in Cameroon to even Carry First in South Africa, trying to figure out this very difficult problem. Because I think a lot of African game developers want to make particularly African-themed and inspired games, but they sell them, trying to sell them to Africans. But it's a very difficult problem. While us and other studios in South Africa typically sell on PC and console to the West. Mm-hmm. And particularly with our game, there hasn't really been a studio on the continent that's tried to make a bigger budget PC and console game that's African inspired and sell it to the West. It's one of the theories we wanted to experiment with this specific project. But it's a very lively game development scene, particularly in South Africa and places, pockets like in Nigeria and Lagos. I think most of the development on the continent knows there's a gold mine somewhere in Africa. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just looking for where on earth it might be. And it's a very difficult problem that much braver studio heads than me are trying to figure out. I think in some ways it's much easier to just put it on Steam and pray.
Of course. What has been the response from like other developers and gamers in Africa to the announcement?
Yeah, vastly, for the most part, hugely positive. I think people have sort of said things in passing, like it set a new benchmark for what games can be made in Africa in a specific kind of way. There's always going to be a certain element that has criticism in some certain way, and we expect that, but I would say 90% plus are very positive. Yeah.
And we're going to go and finally go into the last segment of this conversation, and we could catch us off the break. You listen to Modern Myth episode 26, and this is the game developers behind the newly announced game Relooted. So we've kind of, actually, I think we've touched on most of the things I did want to kind of talk about today. I'm interested in the game, without spoilers being announced, are there archaeologists represented in the game?
That seems like a fair question to ask on this podcast. Yeah.
No, but you know what?
Okay,
DLC would definitely put in an archaeologist.
Are there any archaeologists? What? Prof Grace is taking a history professor.
Yeah, right? She's a history professor.
Okay, that's like half in, half out. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we have an academic.
Nondescript academic.
So the question would be, and sorry, this is going to get the really difficult part of the interview here. So in game canon, who wrote the descriptions about the artifacts? How do you know about them?
Oh, God, that's a really good question. We need to cancel this winner again.
No, we didn't.
It must be Prof Grace, right?
Yeah, she's the person who has all of this knowledge and she's got the connections. It's between Prof Grace and Etienne, who works in a museum.
That was awkward.
I was not expecting that question.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the next time it comes up, you'll be like, oh, I've done this one before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only interesting because to me, like, I think how archaeologists and archaeology is portrayed in video games is something that, like, I'm very keen on.
Yeah.
Because I know we've had an Indiana Jones game and we've had, like, obviously the Uncharted games, Nathan Drake, Lara Croft. Like, there's so many games that you can think about, but none of them have actually been archaeological in kind of nature, you know, in the same way that, like, games are made with game mechanics in mind, specific game mechanics. There's no game yet that's actually made archaeological mechanics into the gameplay.
There must be one. There must be one. It's like truck driving Sims. There must be archaeology Sims.
Well, because there's a truck driving one.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, it's not even about the digging. It's like the next bit of it. And don't worry, I know I'm sounding like I'm going to rant. This will all make sense very soon.
We're here for it. Go ahead.
I think the thing that I find very difficult, and this is even talking to other archaeologists, is like selling archaeological theory to people and like the next bit. So I'm of the opinion that data does not speak for itself, you know? And if anybody's telling you, oh, this data speaks for itself, they're interpreting for you. You know, you cannot translate what happened to the past 100% because it doesn't exist anymore. The past technically doesn't exist. It's all the present. You know, we have objects from the past that have moved through time to arrive at us in the present. We're lucky enough that they're here and we're trying. A crime scene that's like hundreds of years old, trying to work back the steps and what people are doing and everything. And it's difficult sometimes to help people understand that, like, items themselves, they're really powerful, they're really important, they're really symbolic. But at the same time, there's so much that surrounds them in culture, in intangible sense. That is so much, that is also archaeology, and that's also really valuable.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever think about how to represent intangible archaeology?
Oh my God, I regret coming on this podcast.
Yeah, this last bit is tough. So in our research, we have found things that are interesting in that, and I'm going to use these, I think it was the Nok terracottas that were found, that because they were removed so carelessly and because people were just selling them, they were not able to find out more about that culture. And we never will know about it. And the little bit that we do know was removed with so little care that story's been taken away from the people that, you know, that's their culture or at least their heritage. And now they're just devoid of context and meaning.
Yeah, I think that's also something at some point we ran across in the research that pointed out exactly what you're saying, the context, like putting something in a museum often in terms of the way it's used in many different African cultures sort of removes the thing. It's like a lot of the time, this, like the Ngadji drum, for example, it's meant to be played, right? Just displaying it like that or having it in storage kind of makes it devoid of meaning to some extent. And I think one of the awkward ironies of this game as well is that a lot of the research and understanding of the artifacts we have in the game and that most African artifacts have is done by Western archaeologists and historians. And a lot of the actual culture and context and histories around these artifacts are held in oral histories particularly. So by removing them, not just from the context, but also the place, you lose access to what the actual story and history and context and intangibles, I managed to work my way back to the question, might actually be, which I think is a really weird irony, is that we have this game with all this information, but we're not necessarily sure how accurate all of it is, which is weird. So no archaeology games for you. You guys don't deserve it.
Bad work.
Bad archaeology.
Coming back to the start, in terms of like you were saying about how, you know, that this is based on real, some parts of it is based on real locations, but it is set in a future that is different, that is trying to solve problems. Yeah. What would be the museum of the future? Like, after everybody in Relooted has obviously won the game and got 100% of the items back, what is the job of the museum in this world?
Wow, this conversation is over. What are these questions?
We're making a video game. Okay, let's just make
game devs.
Sorry, I'm really intrigued. Yeah. Okay, sorry. I'll reset this.
No, we can do it.
We can do it.
Give us a shot. We'll do it.
Okay, go for it.
You first.
One interesting thing is that when these artifacts are taken by the team, they have one central point that they drop them off, because these are not wealthy people who can just fly all over the continent. And so they take them to the Museum of Black Civilizations in Senegal. And this museum has got what I should now probably call an exhibition, which is not an exhibition. It's a space that's left empty for the return of artifacts. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the museum of the future can definitely be about cultural exchange, because it's not like I don't believe in cultural exchange, but I just think that the museum of the future is definitely the people of that place deciding where, how, and when things are going to be displayed or loaned, or here's a little bit of a larger piece that, you know, you can send maybe, I don't know, from Kenya to South Africa, traveling exhibitions, the whole nine. I think that for me is a museum of the future, but it definitely needs to stay in the continent for at least 100 years. Nothing is leaving.
Like, ironically, almost we're super pro museum. We're like, build more of them. Build them in Africa. We just want there to be things in here from the continent. Yeah. Pro museum, actually. Wow.
Because that's how you have access to your cultural heritage, right? There needs to be a space where you can go and be curious and learn.
As obviously, in contrast with like private collections, like that's a whole other thing. But the future, the museum of the future is voluntary. That's really what it comes down to, is that that there's kind of there's a community buy-in. You know, it's not hubris, it's not tradition, it's not half finders keepers, it's like real proper connections, real proper relationships, and actually, like you said, like things can be an actual cultural exchange.
Yeah.
That's a way better answer. Thank God.
It's good. So what, for people who are excited about playing this game, which I definitely know there are a few archaeologists who are intrigued, interested, excited, just let us know what platforms it's coming out on, when it's released and all that, just so our listeners can find out more information.
Yeah, so it'll come out on Steam and the Epic Game Store for PC, and also Xbox Series X and S for the time being. And you can obviously follow us on all socials with @NyamaCorp and find out when it will release eventually, sometime.
Perfect. And if anybody wants to find out more about NyamaCorp, just Google it. Can you just spell it for our listeners? Yeah.
You know what? That's funny. I made this studio title, ironically, to be as difficult to pronounce for Westerners as possible. And now I'm starting to regret it.
There's no going back now.
It's spelled NYAMAKOP. and it's a portmanteau word. Nyama means meat in Swahili and Zulu, uh-huh. at least, mm-hmm. and kok means head in Afrikaans. So it just means meat head.
Okay. I like that. Thank you very much for sitting down and getting grilled by me for an extended episode. You've been absolutely wonderful guest, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much for having us. Now it's clear misconceptions are held dear. They told you what you want to hear. Why can't you say that the truth will set you free? Expose this modern myth with me.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultura Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.